And I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. Thanks for being here. We're just out new in West Valley. We're starting a new church, so it means a ton when you attend on the weekends. Thanks for being online. This is your church, too. Hope you'll swing by on a Sunday and check us out. We're in this topic called invest, and how does Jesus help us invest our lives? How does he help us invest our time, invest our energy? And today the topic is money, investment of money. 1997, if I would have invested $2,100 in Apple computer, today I'd have $150,000. Now, everybody knew who Apple computer was in 1997. Some of us were around. We could have made that investment. But could you spot the opportunity? And one of the things about investing is before you can get the return on your results, you have to spot the opportunity. You have to see the opportunity. And it's so difficult when it comes to money, because it seems like we get sandwiched in between guilt and greed. We feel guilty because we feel like we should be giving more, and we feel greedy because we want more. And so you get sandwiched in, and guilt nor greed is productive when it comes to learning how to invest your money. They're not helpful. They don't change us. They're very poor guides. But Jesus can guide you to make an investment, and make an investment that you'll be happy about the results. And I just don't mean a financial investment to get more money. I mean investing money so more people can meet Jesus. That's what Eastlake's all about. Or investing money in a relationship, and maybe only one relationship, that your investment would cause something to happen for them that never could have happened had you not invested money. Years ago, Clarice and I, there was a young lady in the youth group. She was just in high school, and man, she was just a ball of talent, really smart, great potential, but the chances of her going to college were just like almost none. And one day God tells me, he says, I want to make sure she goes to college, and I want to use you. I'm going to use you to make sure she goes to college. Now, my children are all little at that time. I don't have any money. I don't have any college fund. I was like, all right, you know, God. And so I started to get brochures on different colleges and read them. And I picked out some, and I talked to her. I said, you know, you're going to have to start thinking about going to college. And she starts reading through these brochures. And we see this one brochure of a college. And she said, I think this might be a good one for me to go to. It's a Christian college. And God had already started to put in her heart that she might be in the ministry. So she gets everything ready at school, takes her SATs, and everything's prepared. And a group of us went down and we visited this college. We drove all the way to see this college. And we go there and we're walking on the campus and we're seeing, she's great. And she's like, this is where I just know God wants me to go. And I'm like, you know, okay, you know, and it's summertime now. And I'm thinking, yeah, this everything seems great, but where's the money coming from? Like, who's paying for the tuition and the books and the spending money and how are you going to eat and, you know, where are you going to stay? And, you know, this is getting closer now. She has to go down. And I'm thinking, you know, and so I'm saying, God, where, you know, when are you going to bring the money? How is she going to go to school? He says, well, you're going to pay for it. And I was like, I'm going to pay for it. I don't have that kind of money, Lord. When I got little kids, God, I don't have any money saved up for somebody to go to college. I'm not ready for that. And then I just started to take the trust step of investing. And I can't tell you how we paid for tuition that first year. I have no idea. I know we scrimped and we borrowed some money and we got it together and we paid for some books and we had some spending money and we got her through that first year. And then the next year came, there's no money. And honestly, I don't even know to this day, how did we get her through that second year of school? I mean, we got her through school, we got the tuition, we got the books, and now she's a sophomore. And in the summer of her sophomore year, and this is the truth, a man comes up to me at church one day and says, I need to talk to you about let me talk to you about something. He said, I don't know if this will make any sense to you, but I think I'm supposed to pay for the rest of her college. And I said, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's God. No need to pray, you know. He said, well, I'm going to pray about it because I think I'm supposed to. And do you know that he took that assignment on? And he paid for everything the rest of the way. And we all got to go to her graduation. When you watched her go across that stage, you knew, now there's an investment. She works for a church now. She's a pastor, and she works with children and students, and she leads groups. And she ended up going on to getting her master's, and now she's a pastor in the ministry. See, what happened was an investment in a relationship. It's very tricky when you get sandwiched between guilt and greed. And Jesus can help us get out of all that. And it's the big idea this weekend. Write it in your notes. How to invest your money with Jesus. And we're going to see a portion of Scripture to start with that St. Paul wrote. So St. Paul was a person that he had a lot of money at one time in his life. I mean, a heap of it. I mean, he'd made a lot of money being religious. That's how he'd made all his money. Very religious person, lots and lots of money. And then he converts and he becomes a Christian. And Jesus starts helping him invest his money differently. And he calls him onto the mission field. And listen, this is who Paul is. He would go into cities where there was never a mention of Jesus. Nobody even knew who Jesus was. And there was always a dominant religion or church. And Paul would go in there with a small group of people, and he would start to establish churches. I mean, that was like his job. So he went from a lot of wealth to no money, and my job is to go pioneer churches, establish churches, places where nobody even knows who Jesus is. They don't know the story, and there's this dominant religion that's huge, and he goes in there. And one of the people that he took with him was a person named Timothy. He was younger, and oftentimes Timothy would stay behind. Here was the process. They'd go in, they'd get it established, kind of like here, and then Paul would go to another place, but Timothy would stay behind, and it would be him and these people, like us, they would establish this church in an area. And Paul's writing him a letter about it, and he wants to make sure that the rich people understand how to invest their money with God, with Jesus and his kingdom. So let's read it. Here it comes right now. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So this very first line, command those who are rich in this present world. Now you may be thinking right off the bat, whoo, that doesn't apply to me because I am certainly not rich. Has nothing to do with me because I'm not rich at all. Of course, in this present world that we live in, if you are a working person in the United States, if you're in America and you're a working person, you're in the top 4% of wage earners in this present world. So maybe we're richer than we think in this present world. One of the things about, like, am I rich or am I not, I don't feel rich, and so I don't think I'm rich, and I don't feel rich because I have money problems. And, you know, one of the ways, you can have rich people money problems. So let's just check it out. I'll give you some rich people money problems. We had a really super hot summer. This is like one of the hottest summers ever. So I don't know, just think about it. Did you ever have, like, did this summer, did your air conditioning, like one of your air conditioners go out anywhere? Like one of your air conditioners just went out, and you, your air conditioner goes out at your house, and you can't keep your house cool. And so you call the people up on the phone and say, listen, man, my air conditioner's out, and you know, you got to get over here right away. And they say, well, I can't be over there for a week. And you're like, a week? I can't live in this house with no air conditioning for an entire week. Of course, that's a rich person problem. I mean, you got to get over here now. It's like 80 degrees up here. I got to be down in my basement. Of course, if you have a basement, that's a rich person's problem. Or here's one. Here's one of mine. Here's one of my rich people problems. How am I going to get that iPhone 5? That's a rich person's problem. Or here's one. I don't know why people are like this. This is really, like, this can really bug me. I mean, it's like people actually want to tell me how to water my lawns. They don't like it that I take perfectly drinking water and spray it all over my bushes and trees and lawns whenever I want to. They don't like when I take drinking water and spray it all over my lawn. They think they should regulate when I get to use drinking water. Well, I want to use my drinking water on my lawn and my bushes and all of my shrubs because I paid for them and I don't want them to die. And so I want to use that drinking water whenever I want. But it's a problem because they frown on it when drinking water rolls down the gutter. Of course, that's a rich person's problem. If you have little tiny kids and they go to school and you've ever had problems with the administration or the teachers and your kids get to go to a school, your kids go to school for 12 years, they go to a school for free and you're having problems with the teachers, of course, that's a rich person's problem. It's a problem that a rich person has. You know, one of the ways you know if you're rich or not is what kind of problems you have. And so before you go too far and think, well, this doesn't have anything to say to me, this is about rich people, how rich really are you? Who's been dreaming of the iPhone 5? And it's a problem how you're going to get it before you qualify because of your calling plan. It's a rich person's problem. So just open up a little bit and step into and think, well, maybe I'm richer than I think. And here's what it says. It says, command them. It says, not to be arrogant, no, to put their hope in wealth. So what it's saying is, no matter how much money you have, don't put your hope. Here's what hope is. It's the emotion that I have while I'm on the way somewhere. Don't, while you're on the way to pursuing your dreams, don't put your hope in wealth. And no matter how much you have or how little you have, money is too uncertain. I have these friends that worked and worked and worked, and they saved and saved and saved, and they thought they had the perfect portfolio. For 25 years, they're stashing money away, 401k, stashing money away. 6 months before they were going to retire, you should have been around them. They were glowing. Like, man, we're going to travel and do this stuff. We got a houseboat, and this is going to be awesome. I mean, you know, we got our money all saved up. And 3 months before they were going to retire, everything crashed, and they lost two-thirds of their retirement. Gone. Because wealth is uncertain. I mean, what he's saying is, now if you're rich, be very, very careful, because there'll be the tendency to think that you can put your hope that the answer will be in money. But there's lots of things that money won't buy. I have a really good friend that I've known almost all my adult life, and he's wandered away from the faith. He's trying to convince himself that he doesn't believe in God anymore. He doesn't believe in the story about Jesus. He doesn't have anything to do with it anymore at all. And you know what? I can't buy him back to Jesus. There's no money I can use. In fact, I can't buy hope to believe he'll come back to Jesus. Only God gives that kind of hope. And so he's telling Timothy, make sure that all the rich people know that have rich people problems. Don't put your hope in money, because money is too uncertain. But he says, put your hope in God. Now listen to this part. Put your hope in God, who provides everything we need for our enjoyment. So listen, just jot in your notes somewhere, because this is important. When I put my hope in money, then I am my own provision. But when I put my hope in God, he's my provision. So listen now. You can either be your provider, or you can have a provider. It's your choice. Don't put your hope in money, but put your hope in God, who richly provides everything we need for our enjoyment. And I wish people didn't always paint God out to be such a killjoy, like a boring God that doesn't want us to have any fun. I mean, look what it says here in this sentence. Richly provides for all of our enjoyment. It's like God's okay with us enjoying life and having things and doing things. He's providing for us so we can have joy and enjoyment. When I was in college, I went to a Christian college. I had a professor there, and his name was Hobson. He taught Bible. And he drove a Porsche. And every year, he tells the story, every year the students and the kids come in and would give him so much crap because he drives a Porsche. I can't believe you drive a Porsche with everything that's going on in the world and poverty and this and that. So he had a little speech that he gave every year, and I was in class one year when he gave it. He says, students, as many of you know, I drive a Porsche. And I want to tell you a story behind it, because when I first got my Porsche, there was a lot of criticism and pushback, and all these people thought it was so bad that I had a Porsche. So I started thinking, well, maybe I'm not supposed to have a Porsche. So I prayed about it, and I started to talk God about it. He's telling the class this. He says, and I'm not going to say this was God's exact words to me. Hobson's speaking now. He tells the whole class. He says, I don't know if God had said it just like this, but here's what I heard God say this. Good for you, Hobson. You got yourself a Porsche. And I remember sitting in that class as a student going, really? You'd give me a Porsche? Because I didn't see God like that. I thought maybe he'd only like give me a Yaris. or you know, everything had to be so tight. And there was no joy. He wouldn't ever want me to have a great vacation. He would never want me to, you know, have some of my dreams. He had to just be like Mother Teresa's little cousin. And God told Hobson, good for you, you got yourself a Porsche. Boy, and all those students shut their mouth and they started thinking, well, how about a Ferrari? God gives us things for our enjoyment. We can enjoy life if we can learn how to be rich. Because let's face it, most of us are. You know, if you're in this room, you're probably in the top 10% of wage earners even in this country. Most of us are rich. We have rich people problems. And if we can learn how to be rich, if we can learn how to be rich, it begins with understanding that we have a provider, that we're not our own provision. And Jesus told a story one time. Paul's picking up on it here. He tells this story, and he's talking about wealth and how it matters in our life. He tells this story, and in the story, he's talking about how do we live every day in the context of the big picture that there's a God in heaven when it comes to money. And right in your notes, number one, the small picture. So this is Jesus now. He tells this story, this parable. He's talking to people, and here's this story. And then he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yield an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And that's a rich person problem, by the way. You know, when you say to yourself, well, I got to have a bigger kitchen. I got to remodel my house, man, so I have a formal dining room. I got to put another shed in the back. I got to pour a driveway for my trailer to go alongside my house. I mean, that's a rich person's problem. I got to have more, bigger. I have to have some place to store all my stuff. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine as long as you can live your everyday life in the context of there's a provider in heaven. And so he has a rich person problem. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And let's say for that for a second. Not only is it fine to be rich, because that's okay, but the question is, how is it that I see the small picture of life within the big picture? How do I make certain that I live every single day within the big picture of life? And Jesus is talking to this person, and then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. He said to himself. He said, self, what would you like to do? And self said, I want it all for myself. I'll store my surplus grain. Do you want to, here's a definition of rich, when I have way more than I need. And he has way more than he needs, and he says, self, what do you want to do with the excess? What do you want to do with all this that you have that's more than you need? And self says, well, I want to keep it all for me. That's what I want to do. So I got to build bigger things so I can keep it all. You know, it never occurs to him that he could save a reasonable amount. He take all that he needs and then save a reasonable amount and then give the rest away to people that don't have enough. See, the way he lives in the small picture is, it's all for me. He doesn't live in the big picture that there's people that don't have enough and I have way more than I need. I don't know about, you know, you have your own background and what you went through. I know what it is to not have enough. Even before I got into kindergarten, I remember it so clearly. My mother was a single mom. There was me and my two sisters. And there was a time when we didn't have any food at all. Now, this is the food. I mean, no food. I'm not like playing around like we didn't have Ho-Hos or Twinkies. I mean, no food. We had one box of Wheaties cereal, one box that was half full, and that was it. And that was in the entire house. That's all we had. And we used to pour the Wheaties, we'd pour it into a bowl, and then we'd put water on it. And that's what we ate, me and my two sisters and my mom. That was it. And the box was going down. I mean, we did not have enough. And I remember the day when there's this knock at the door, and my mom opens the door, and there's this guy. I can still see his face. This guy is at the door, and he has two bags of groceries in his arms. I've never even seen him before. And he comes walking in, hey, kids! And he puts the two bags of grocery on the counter, and he goes back outside into his car, and he gets two more bags of groceries and sets them down, and he goes back outside. And six bags of groceries he brings in. And I always remember the dinner that my mom made that night. I mean, it was amazing to watch her. It was amazing. It was one of my best memories with my mom. It was amazing to watch her being able to provide because someone had provided for her. It was amazing to get to watch her make a meal for her children. mean, it was great to have the food, but just seeing my mom, watching what she was able to provide for us because someone provided for her. See, that's the big picture. But he doesn't live that way. He lives in the small picture. It's all mine. It all belongs to me. And so none of it goes to waste. I get to keep it all for me. I got to build bigger barns and do more stuff so I can keep it all for me. And that's the small picture. What do you have going on in your life right now with what you have that's more than you need? And don't bail out on me and say, well, I don't have that much. I don't have as much as they have. I'm just asking. Because what Jesus is saying in this story, now listen, when it comes to investing, is the reason I can live in the small picture and invest is because I don't lose sight of the big picture, the context. What do I have, and where are those that don't? See, that's it. And Jesus is telling this story, and here's what he goes on to say. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. That sounds pretty good. I have a lot of stuff for me now, so I can just take life easy and eat, drink, and be merry. So this guy thinks if I keep it all for me, life will be easy. Which is like sort of untrue. I was reading something the other day, and Andrew Carnegie said, you never see a millionaire smile. And he gets this person, eat, drink, and be, I don't, here's like our context. I got plenty of money now. I can go out to lunch and dinner. I can buy good beer. And I can go out to dinner whenever I want. I can order a pizza, and I don't have to use those crappy frozen ones from Smith's. I can get a real pizza. And like I can eat out whenever I want to, and I can go on 3-day vacations, and I can think about my new car. I mean, I've got a lot of money now, man. I get to eat and drink and do whatever I want. Life is going to be really easy. I'm going to be happy, although Jesus doesn't say happy. Because money won't buy happiness. He says, eat, drink, and be merry. He doesn't say be happy. You know what the word merry means? Amusement. It means that money will buy me amusement. I can amuse myself with my new car and my new iPhone, and I can amuse myself with a plate of ribs and a great beer, and I can amuse myself with another trip up to the mountains to go skiing. I'm very amused, and then when I start to not be amused, what do I have to do? Spend more money so I can be more amused. That's why they call it amusement park, which you can visit, but you can't live there. And there's a little clue here Jesus is telling about this man. He gets tricked. He says, man, I'm going to have everything going on for me. I'm going to eat, and I'm going to drink, and I'm going to be amused. I'm going to go to another movie. I'm going to get a bigger TV set. I'm going to get a new pair of shoes. I am going to flash my credit card and show I'm all that. I'm going to be so amused. But you're not happy. Because money can't buy happiness. You can buy amusement. But you better have a lot because you'll have to keep buying and buying and buying and buying. And pretty soon you live in a fake world that's like an amusement park. Because Jesus tells the story, he says, you can eat, drink, and be amused, but you won't be happy. So the small picture is I keep it all for myself. I don't think of anything in the big picture, and the best that can ever happen is I'll be able to fund my amusement. Let's keep reading the story. The big picture, point number two. But God said to him, man, you got to bring God into the story, Jesus. Oh, here comes God. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it'll be for whoever stores up things for themselves and is not rich towards God. But God said, he calls him a fool, not because he's rich. Hey, in this story, God made this guy more rich. In this story, it doesn't say he made really wise, shrewd business decisions. He says the ground produced an abundant harvest. The dirt brought it out of there. Who controls the dirt? Who made sure that it rained enough? Who made sure that the insects didn't attack his crops? But this guy, he takes all the credit. I did it all. Have you ever found yourself taking too much credit for the amount of money you had? Well, I'm the one that went to school, and I did all those papers, and I studied, and I got through college, and I did all that stuff, and I put my resume together, and I bought that suit and combed my hair and went out and got that interview, and it was my smile that got me the job, and I worked all that overtime, and I worked my way from the bottom butt all the way up, and I'm the one now that has a decent when they don't, and I got all that money. It's mine. It's my money because I earned it. Really? Are you sure? Or are we all more like the farmer, that there's so much that's out of our control? How much of it was timing? And you can't control that. And Jesus is saying this farmer completely forgot. So much of the reason that he has this much money is because God blessed him. It came right out of the dirt for the guy. And he forgets all of that. It's like, no, wait a minute. This is my money. Because do you know why God calls him a fool? Because this guy thought that he was in control. And he wasn't. But God said, here comes God now, and he's just trying to tell him, you're not actually in control of your life like you think you are. Now, some people read this and they say, bad God, mean God, he killed him. It doesn't say God killed him. He says your life is going to be demanded from you. It doesn't even say God wants him to die. He's just coming to him and he's just telling him, he said, hey, time's up. Don't read into the scripture, oh, God's punishing him because he didn't spend his money the way he's supposed to. I need to give more money to the poor people and bring more money to church, or God might hit me with lightning too. That's not this story. God just shows up and he's going, hey, I know you've been thinking you control everything. Time's up. And it's interesting because God asks him a question. He asks him a question. He says, who's going to get everything you prepared? And that's not a bad question we should ask ourselves from time to time. Who's going to get all my money and my stuff? I don't mean when I die someday, like today. Who's going to get some of my money today? Because you know what? The man never answers the question. You know why? Because he'd never thought about the question. He didn't have to. He already had the answer. Me. I'm going to get it all. And then God says, well, I've never seen a hearse with a U-Haul being towed behind it. You're not taking anything with you. You're not going to even have any money. Not because you're generous, because you're dead. He didn't have to answer this question. He already had the answer to the question. But it does kind of hang in the air. Jesus tells this story, and he leaves this question just sort of hanging in the air. Who gets all your stuff and your money? I'm sure everybody at that point is like being really quiet. They're like, well, geez, God, I mean. And here's what he says. He says, unless you're rich towards God, you'll end up like this guy. Which is kind of confusing if you think about it. How do you get rich towards God? It's like Santa Claus. Santa Claus comes with little milk and cookies out for Santa Claus. You know, do we do that with God somehow? We go out somewhere and we put some money on a little stool and say, come on, God, come get it. I'll turn my back. I mean, how do you be rich towards God? And Jesus, he gets into that, and it's the good news. Look in your notes, the good news. Money can direct my heart towards Jesus. That's what it's all about. God doesn't need your money. But he does need your heart. And your heart can be directed towards God or not, and your money can direct your heart towards God. Listen to this. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Check this video out.
We understand you have a choice when giving, but here are some of the unique benefits to donating to Souls for Souls. When you give the simple gift of shoes, you're protecting people from life-threatening disease and illnesses. And in many cases, with the proper shoes, children will meet requirements and will be allowed to attend school. You're helping hundreds of people through our micro-enterprise initiatives. Your unwanted shoes help those in developing nations with a sustainable business, a way to support themselves and their families. In times of disaster locally as well as globally, Souls for Souls can help. Your donated shoes provide support to those recovering. You're recycling. We give your unwanted shoes a second life. And Souls for Souls is 100% sustainable. No shoes we receive are ever thrown away or end up in landfills, ever. When you decide to go above and beyond by giving shoes or contributing funds, our staff is ready to help every step of the way. We can provide you with an experience like no other. Take a trip with us through our Travel for Souls program and help us give shoes to people in need. Experience firsthand the joy a pair of shoes can bring. And you could win. Look for challenges and sweepstakes throughout the year to earn an opportunity to join us on one of our trips. And remember, Souls for Souls is a 501c3 nonprofit, so all donations are tax deductible. When it's time to donate, think of Souls for Souls. We're truly changing the world, one pair at a time.
I like emotional videos too, but I kind of like the way they approach this, that they're just sort of straightforward with it, that they don't like try to ramp up our emotions. They just state the facts out there. Like, you have shoes and people don't. You probably have a lot of shoes. And look at this last part of the Bible, because what we're trying to find out now is how money directs my heart towards God. How do I be rich towards God? Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves. Look now, so many people don't understand that when you get your heart directed towards God, you can't outgive God. It says, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I want to show you one of my treasures. These are my Michael Jordan Air Jordan Nike basketball shoes. These are like one of my treasures. I was so sure they were going to make me be able to slam dunk, but it didn't work out. But other than that, like these, I mean, these cost like over $100 when I bought them. And they're the best. And these are my treasure. So I'm thinking last night, I'm thinking, gosh, Lord, I don't really have that big wham, bam, sermon ender. He said, oh, yeah, you do. You're going to show them the shoes you're going to give away. And I'm like, I am? My Nikes? These are my treasure. Of course, what Jesus is saying is where your treasure, your heart is. So if I'm able to treasure these in the big picture and realize that somewhere in the world, some kid is going to walk into school with these on. And man, that's going to be amazing. So I'm asking that you just pour out next week when you come. Be rich towards God. Bring different shoes that you have. You can bring your old crappy ones if you want to. But think about a pair of shoes that maybe is not so. Could you bring those shoes? Bring maybe a treasure, because where your treasure is, so your heart will be also.